Welcome to the Omics Exchange. I'm Angela Page. 71 years ago today, the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Today we're talking with Dr. Bartha Maria Knoppers, who is a professor of human genetics and the director of the Center of Genomics and Policy at McGill University. She holds a doctoral degree in comparative medical law from the University of Paris. Dr. Knoppers founded the Population Project in Genomics, P3G, and Cartagene, which is Quebec's population biobank. She has chaired multiple institutional ethics working groups, including those of the International Cancer Genome Consortium, the Thousand Genomes Project, the Human Cell Atlas, and most notably to us, the Global Alliance for Genomics and Health Regulatory and Ethics Workstream. This International Human Rights Day, we are speaking with Dr. Knoppers to learn more about how Article 27 of the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights is important for global genomic data sharing. Welcome, Dr. Knoppers. Why don't you start us off by explaining what Article 27 actually says?
So this Article 27 states that everyone has the right freely to participate in the cultural life of the community, to enjoy the arts, and to share in scientific advancement and its benefits. It has a second article that's often forgotten. Everyone has the right to the protection of the moral and material interests resulting from any scientific, literary, or artistic production of which he is the author. So this right has the right to science and the right to be recognized as an author and inventor. So in that sense, it balances the trust of science to make data freely available, at the same time recognize human inventiveness. That was in 1948 in Article 27.
You've referred to it previously as a dormant right, Article 27. Can you explain why that is, or why it was overlooked, and how you sort of dug it back up and dusted it off for this purpose?
Yeah, I've been a law professor for 23 years before I moved to the Faculty of Medicine here at McGill University, and I took international law. I remember the declaration, but I don't remember this article. And it was an article in Science magazine published by the American Association for the Advancement of Science in June 2013 called A Human Right to Science. And I thought, what? So I started digging and I found out that this Article 27 of the Declaration, which is a declaration of the United Nations, was actually adopted as an official, if I can use non-legal language, official international covenant on economic, social, and cultural rights in 1966. So I thought, wow, there's this right in Article 15 of the covenant that looks like the exact wording of the Article 27. And that was the purpose of that editorial in Science and the AAAS, was to start thinking, how can we activate this right? How can we go beyond ethics and national legislation? Can we make this a right that citizens can have the freedom of science, benefit from the science, and be recognized for their contribution to the science?
So you noticed these multiple references to Article 27, but was it being upheld in any way?
So a colleague in Cambridge University, Professor Rumiana Yotova, and I decided to look at all the reports. Now, when countries sign and ratify and they become a state party, they have to report every few years to the United Nations. What have they done to realize this right? So we started looking through reports, and we didn't find very much from since 1966. But then we started noticing around the 1990s, when the internet became more widespread, references to data sharing, access to data, international collaboration with respect to data, and realized that this was actually could be the foundation for promoting the right of everyone to benefit from science. And we found out that UNESCO in 2009 had already issued a statement called the Venice Statement on the right to enjoy the benefits of scientific progress and its applications. And somehow that had laid dormant as well. So beginning there, we thought, let's find a way to activate this right in a way that can be universally applicable. So it's a human right.
Okay, so you saw this article in 2013, which is the same year that GA4GH was founded. Was that a coincidence, or were you looking for it?
Not looking for it. It was a eureka moment, let's put it that way. And I thought, how do we make the Global Alliance for Genomics and Health, the GA4GH, how can we catapult it into a new way of thinking? And that's why the framework for the responsible sharing of genomic and health-related data that was written for GA4GH and part of its mission, part of its constitution, actually is founded on this dual right of freedom of science / benefit and recognition.
So you've shared this journey of Article 27, going from a dormant right to gaining more recognition within the scientific community. Do you feel that something's changed, that the community is now starting to think about science in terms of this foundation of human rights?
It's coming along. It's very slow. You know, the law, give any, even a bill that you want to have, give it 10 years. I was part of a Royal Commission on Reproductive Technologies. We handed in our report in 1993 in Canada, and we didn't see a law until 2004. I'm not saying that we need a law. What we need are frameworks, policies, directives from governments, from the European Commission, and so on, that start repeating this right, that start entering it into common culture, common parlance.
So I've heard you say that the benefits of data sharing outweigh the risks. Explain that a bit more for us.
There are enough scandals of data leaks. There's the Cambridge Analytica. There are huge monopolies on data and how data is shared and people have access to it. But I think that the sort of phobic protectionism, presuming that people at all costs want privacy, and they may, with respect to not having their children photographed or not being subject to advertising without spam and the rest of it.
And we know these kinds of scandals are scary to the public. We all hear about people being hacked or having their personal data accessed without their permission. But I'm curious how sharing genomic data is maybe unique.
I presume that most people want to have the benefits of sharing medical data. And I say that because that medical data is about them, it's about others, but it's about human beings. And the more that we understand how our situation fits into that of others, the more we can understand how to prevent and to treat. So I go from the opposite presumption. I don't presume it's risky. I presume it's beneficial.
So given the benefits and the risks, how do we enter data sharing into the common parlance or common culture, as you mentioned before? How do we address people's concerns while also moving science forward?
I think we should not be naive, and I think we need to respond to the legitimate concerns of individuals when it comes to data sharing, especially data sharing across countries, across borders, and so on, in different cultures and different environments. Genetics has always been associated with the potential for discrimination, and there has been discrimination. Genetics has always been associated with something, you know, that's a fatal, rare disease and has negative consequences. And so you can see that, like reproductive information before it, it had a stigma to it. So when you set out a framework for the responsible sharing of genomic and health-related data, which is the framework of the Global Alliance, you want to both move data sharing forward, but also respond to those concerns. So the regulatory ethics work stream prepared specific policies for addressing those concerns. So there's a privacy policy. There's a consent to data sharing policy. There's a accountability policy, which, by the way, includes the question or the issue of, if you have consented for sharing data, why are you not sharing? Which is an interesting interpretation of accountability. And these policies continue and are revised over time to respond to different ways of data sharing and need for different kinds of consent as genomic data enters the health field. And we try to prospectively anticipate what the ethics and governance and legal issues may be.
Right. And that's why the work of the regulatory and ethics workstream is so important. So as we work towards this goal, what are some of the remaining gaps in the world of responsible data sharing that the regulatory and ethics workstream plans to focus on going forward?
Our primary challenge in the last year has been, how do we serve as a motor to encourage researchers in Europe who are now subject to the General Data Protection Regulation, very heavy-handed approach to data security and data privacy. And on the face of it, it could easily be interpreted to say you need an explicit consent for everything. But if you do a proper reading of it, and a lot of the legal beagles in the GA4GH, as well as their bioethics colleagues and so on, have started looking at it and saying, how do we interpret this in a way that does not make data go back to data hoarding, data silos? That was the way that the genomics community worked pretty well before the map of the human genome. How do we not lose the momentum of data sharing and continue to share internationally? I mean, it's so important. And that brings me to the second big challenge. Does our health system have sufficient diversity in the genomic information it has access to be able to interpret a particular patient's symptoms or prevent those symptoms when most population reference databases are 81% Caucasian? So our second challenge after facing the general data protection regulation and a seemingly restrictive approach to data sharing is to integrate more diverse data into our databases to properly represent modern heterogeneous populations, because we can't ever achieve genomic medicine for all in a democratic sense. In a scientific sense, we can't do proper genomic medicine if we don't have that diversity used in the clinical setting.
Thank you so much, Dr. Knoppers. This has really been a great conversation, and we appreciate having you. This Human Rights Day, we want to remember that Article 27, along with the rest of the Universal Declaration, includes all people, regardless of health status, gender, race, country of origin, or any other factors. Everyone everywhere has the right to benefit from scientific advancement and to be recognized for their contributions. Thank you for listening to the Omics Exchange, a podcast of the Global Alliance for Genomics and Health. GA4GH is the international standards organization for genomics, aimed at accelerating human health through data sharing. I'm Angela Page, and this is the Omics Exchange.